The orders of the court are posted outside and in the clerk's office and available for your... No, they're not either. They'll be out in tomorrow. This is... We're still getting used to arguments on Tuesday. We have two causes to be submitted this morning in oral argument. In the order in which they will be presented, they are as follows. Texas Education Agency and others versus Cypress Fairbanks Independent School District and others from Travis County. And Jupiter Oil Company versus Gene Snow from Eastland County. In each of these causes, the court has allowed 20 minutes for petitioners and respondents to present oral arguments. Petitioners may withhold as much time as they desire for a rebuttal and will advise the marshal of whatever time warnings they desire in order to preserve that rebuttal time. Counsel in Jupiter versus Snow are not required to remain in the courtroom while the first argument is going on, but we ask that you remain nearby so that we may proceed to your argument without delay. We will take a brief recess in between the presentation of these two oral submissions. The court will finish both of these arguments before we take a lunch break. These arguments are being recorded for the court's convenience. If you desire to listen to a tape of these arguments, you may make application with the clerk of our court. The court is now ready to hear from petitioners in Texas Education Agency versus Cypress Fairbanks.
May it please the court, Mr. Warden and Mr. Robinette will present arguments for the petitioners. They have reserved 5 minutes for the rebuttal.
May it please the court, I am George Warner, Assistant Attorney General, and I represent former Commissioner William Kirby and the Texas Education Agency in this case. I usually begin an oral presentation describing the type of case before the court. This morning, I am prevented from doing that because I have yet to figure out what this case is. It began as a mandamus against the Commissioner of Education to prevent him from holding evidentiary administrative hearings in four cases. The school districts allege that the commissioner does not have the power to conduct an evidentiary proceeding that is beyond the scope of his authority delegated to him by the legislature in Section 1113A of the Education Code. And yet they sued as defendants the Texas Education Agency and Commissioner Kirby in his official capacity only. As I understand the law, the state cannot act outside of its authority, and since a public official only has the authority to act within the authority delegated to him by the legislature, in his official capacity, he cannot act outside of that authority. The school district did not name Commissioner Kirby in his individual capacity. In the trial court, an amended pleading sought a declaratory judgment, although it cited absolutely no authority for such an action. We did file a special exception. After the cause was dismissed by the trial court, an appeal was brought to the Court of Appeals. There, it was alleged that a Section 12 declaratory judgment action under the Administrative Procedures Act, which deals with the validity or applicability of an agency rule, was pled. Even though there was no formal rule that they were attacking, and even though Section 12 was never pled in the trial court. The Court of Appeals granted an injunction and joined the four administrative hearings pending before the commissioner, and then rendered a judgment and an opinion in which it cited only the Uniform Declaratory Judgments Act, a statute that has never been pled by the school districts in any pleading before any court in this case. The Court of Appeals holds that the Commissioner of Education may not, and I underscore the word may not, be able to hold evidentiary proceedings. And since the allegation is that he cannot do that and it is beyond his statutory authority, the district court has jurisdiction to hear that cause now, and that exhaustion of administrative remedies is not required. Even though they've sued the wrong parties under a wrong and constantly changing cause of action at the wrong time. Court of Appeals holds that exhaustion of administrative remedies is not appropriate in this case. The legislature in the Administrative Procedures Act authorized an aggrieved party to appeal an agency decision if administrative remedies had been completely exhausted. In this case, the school districts are not aggrieved because the commissioner has made no decision, and the administrative remedies have not been exhausted because the administrative hearings have yet to be held. While the legislature authorized in the Administrative Procedures Act a petition for judicial review after a final agency decision, the Court of Appeals opinion in this case allows a petition for judicial preview before a final agency decision. It holds essentially that exhaustion is not required. There are cases in which exhaustion was not required, but those cases are the exception to the general rule requiring exhaustion. We believe that in this case, if the Court of Appeals opinion stands, the exhaustion requirement in the Administrative Procedures Act has effectively been repealed, and the exception will become the rule, because all a party before an agency will have to do, no matter what action the agency takes against it, however minor, is to go to the courthouse and plead that it is beyond the authority of the agency to take that action, and the district court will have the jurisdiction to hear the cause on the merits at that time, interlocutory or prematurely.
If the commissioner ordered a jury trial, could a challenge to the district court be appropriate?
Yes, I believe it would, Your Honor. I think that might fall in the exception category.
What distinguishes that rather extreme example from the case that we have before? What is the line that distinguishes?
Well, I think that 1113A confers on the commissioner both personal and subject matter jurisdiction, the party, the aggrieved persons, which are teachers in these cases, and the school district on the other side, are within the authority of the agency, and the subject matter does deal with an action by a school board that adversely affects the teachers. To make a more extreme example, if the commissioner were to decide to grant some divorces or probate some wills or incarcerate anybody, I think that a person could go to the court to shut that down. In this court's decision in Westheimer, the court stopped the commissioner from revisiting or reviewing a prior final decision of the State Board of Education, which had not been appealed. Those are the types of cases that I think fit within the exception. But in this case, you don't have any of that. There is subject matter jurisdiction clearly stated and followed in Section 1113A of the Education Code. More particularly, there is no specialized or particularized harm that would accrue to the school districts were they required to wait. The cases that have been that have not required exhaustion generally had some sort of irreparable harm that could not be remedied or on which relief could not be granted by the agency. In these four cases, the commissioner could decide each and all of those cases in favor of the school districts, and that's all the relief they could possibly want. The issues that they want to assert can be brought up on appeal if necessary, if the dispute is not resolved administratively.
But as you suggest, rather exaggeratedly, the commissioner could also grant a divorce and you could appeal that.
I think that's accurate, yes, Your Honor.
So, but you think the district court could review that in this under this procedure that we have before us, but not the scope of review, which is the question here. What's the difference?
Well, the difference is that it seems to me that the legislature has not or probably could not confer jurisdiction or the power on the commissioner to grant a divorce. But the legislature does have and has conferred jurisdiction on the commissioner to resolve disputes concerning the school laws of Texas or parties aggrieved by actions of the local school district. And there isn't any constitutional problem with that I am aware of. Courts have been reviewing decisions of the commissioner of that statute for 60 years, I guess. And it seems to me that that's a different type of case. Maybe it's along the same line. And I think that what I would argue is, or what I do argue is, that the case where exhaustion is not required ought to be the clear case of an agency acting outside of its authority. There ought to be some clear abuse of discretion, or maybe not abuse of discretion, but a clear attempt to do something that is not within his power. In this case, I don't think that is clear. I think it's not even muddy. It's clear in the opposite direction. And I think that distinguishes that type of case.
Are there any other sections other than Section 11.13A that you're primarily relying upon?
Well, 1113A was the one that was attacked. It is the general appeal mechanism by which matters are brought from local school districts to the commissioner. There are other statutes that do specify appeals and do cover more specific actions, like the chapter 19, section 19 has the detachment and annexation proceedings. But the general review authority under 1113, which I think covers generally the entire scope of the commissioner's authority to hold a hearing. And I think what has happened in this case, there's been a confusion between the power or the jurisdiction of the agency and the method or the standard of review. It seems to me that the commissioner can review a matter, and he can decide how he's going to do that, obviously with certain limits that haven't been broken in this case. But once he does that, I think that the parties need to wait and to exhaust their administrative remedies. This court in two cases, recent cases, I think, have rendered opinions which I think support our position, the Webb County Appraisal District case and the Bell Helicopter case. In Webb County, this court stated that a party had to be present at the appraisal review board hearing or he waived his right to judicial review, stating that if he wasn't required to do that, the administrative hearing process would be emasculated and would become useless. Similarly here, I think that the administrative hearing process, not just for the commissioner, but for all parties, will become emasculated and useless if the parties are not required to exhaust their administrative remedies.
Counsel, Mr. Kirby is no longer the Commissioner of Education. Have you filed a suggestion of changing the name?
No, I have not.
Amended pleadings to Mr. Menor?
No, I have not done that yet, Your Honor. No, sir. I'd like to make one comment on the substance of the arguments, and then I'll yield to Mr. Robinette. They assert that Section 1113A limits the commissioner to a substantial evidence review of a local record. An attempt to persuade the legislature to amend that section in 1984 to limit the commissioner in that way failed. But having failed to persuade the legislature to put it in the statute, the school districts in this case have been attempting to persuade the courts that it's already in there.
Do you agree with the Attorney General? Attorney General's brief on behalf of the PUC that we ought to decide the merits of the scope of review of the commissioner? Well, I kind of peek at it.
I understand. I've read it, and I think it's an excellent brief, and I'm glad that they filed that on our behalf. The problem I have is if you do that in terms of conferring jurisdiction on the courts at this point, I think that the exhaustion requirement in the APA has been repealed. And so my answer would be yes, I would prefer that you get to the merits because the parties have waited over 2 years now, and I don't think they should wait anymore. But at the same time, I would not want a decision that reaches the merits and confers jurisdiction on the district court, which essentially, not just in the TEA scenario, but in all administrative law scenario, repeals Section 19A's exhaustion requirement and allows parties willy-nilly to go to the courthouse when they don't like what an agency says it's going to do. Thank you.
May it please the court, my name is Mark Robinette. I'm an attorney with the firm of Brim and Arnett in Austin. I'm speaking on behalf of all of the attorneys for all of the teachers in this cause, including Mr. Brim of my firm and Mr. Truman Dean of Houston. And there was a question during Mr. Warner's presentation concerning the commissioner having a jury trial. Would that be immediately appealable to the courts on an interlocutory basis? And the answer is yes, the commissioner would be acting outside his authority. The easy answer in this case is to state that the commissioner is not acting outside of his authority, therefore there is no jurisdiction for the district court in interfering with the commissioner's action in doing exactly what he is authorized to do, which is to hold an evidentiary hearing, make his own findings of fact, and make his own decision.
If he hears a Title 42 action and he's not authorized to do that, isn't he acting outside his authority?
If he is not authorized to do that, that would be outside of his authority.
So how can we tell without looking at the question of his authority?
Well, I think that's exactly what the court has to do, first of all, to determine whether there is jurisdiction to interfere, is to ask the question, is the commissioner acting outside of his authority? If the answer is yes, then the court has the right to halt the proceedings at that point.
So you agree with the Attorney General for the PUC that we should peek at the merits and disagree with Mr. Wag Warner, who said we shouldn't?
Well, I don't know that I'm disagreeing with Mr. Warner. I think that saying you're peeking at the merits is simply a way of saying we have to determine jurisdiction first. And the only way to determine jurisdiction is to determine what authority the commissioner has. That's the language that is used in all cases in determining whether an individual can appeal on an interlocutory basis from the administrative agencies. Is the agency acting outside of its authority? I think that question.
It's cheating to say he is, and therefore we have jurisdiction to say it, or he isn't, and we never could have had the power to say otherwise.
Well, I think that question has to be answered to determine jurisdiction. In this case, the position of the teachers is that the commissioner has jurisdiction to hear the cases exactly the way he has said he is going to do it. As the Education Code 11.13 indicates, any person aggrieved by the school laws of Texas may appeal in writing to the commissioner, who shall hold a hearing and render a decision. That language has remained virtually unchanged throughout this entire century. Back before probably anyone in this courtroom today was alive, the legislature stated that the superintendent of public instruction shall hear and determine all appeals from the rulings and decisions of subordinate officers. You have the same three key words: appeals, hear, determine. Although the word determine has been changed to decision, the word hear has been changed to hearings. During that time, the commissioner has consistently, and he has made no bones about it, determined cases on a de novo basis and has made his own findings of fact and conclusions of law based on the evidence before him. There are a number of cases by the commissioner in the supplement to the teacher's brief, which have been cited for that effect. And if I had more time, I would like to go through some of those.
Do you request that we hold that in this case?
I'm sorry?
Do you request that we hold that in this case?
Yes, my request is that this court hold that the Court of Appeals holding was that the commissioner was threatening to take an action he was not authorized to take. And I'm asking that this court merely hold that the Court of Appeals was wrong. The allegations of fact in the pleadings by the school districts merely alleged the commissioner was going to do something that he has every right to do. And therefore, the courts have no right to interfere with his proceedings at this point. And they have the right to determine on appeal whether his decision was correct or not, but only at that time, and only if an appeal is necessary. What Mr. Warner has said in many instances, which is true, is that the commissioner's determination might end the matter without it ever reaching the courts at all.
Any other questions? Thank you, counsel. The court is ready to hear argument from respondents.
May it please the court, my name is John Fleming. I represent, in this hearing, and for the purpose of this hearing, the respondent school districts. And I would like to agree with Mr. Warner. We think this court should reach the merits. And I take that as at least an implied waiver of his procedural objections that this court has granted an application for writ of error on. But I would like to address the real issue, what we see to be the real issue that perhaps does not come through in the briefs. And the real issue is this: who is going to make the most basic decisions about governance of the school district? Is it going to be the local elected officials who are accountable, who are responsive, or is it going to be an unelected, unaccountable appointee in Austin, Texas?
Or is it going to be the Supreme Court of Texas before the Commissioner of Education has an opportunity to act? Is that right?
I believe in this case, Your Honor, we are justified in bringing this issue to you now rather than piecemeal appealing each decision of the Commissioner when he acts outside his authority.
So even after we write an opinion in this case, then you can see that there may still be ultimately an appeal of the Commissioner's decision under Section 1113. So really we are engaging in a piecemeal resolution of this dispute.
I believe, Your Honor, that it's only piecemeal in this sense. We are challenging his jurisdiction, and once this court has determined his jurisdiction, it will apply to every appeal by any teacher or any other person in front of the Commissioner of Education. And that will eliminate a multiplicity of lawsuits in areas where the commissioner manifestly has no authority. He has no authority to put us to trial on Title VII claims.
How is your client harmed by going before the commissioner, even if you argue that the commissioner is exceeding his authority under the statute, and going through that proceeding and then appealing, pursuing the legal remedy referred to under Section A?
We are harmed in several respects, Your Honor. First of all, the commissioner is substituting his judgment for that of local officials, making their holding of hearings essentially meaningless. They have no reason to decide the basic issues of governance in their district if they are subjected to de novo review at the agency, because the power to hold a de novo hearing is the power to make the decision. That's the first way. The second is that the commissioner is imposing a very burdensome redundancy, a duplication of effort. Children who testify at the local level that they have been harmed physically or sexually by a teacher. A hearing that is required to be held at the local level must testify again in a de novo proceeding at the agency. Not to mention the enormous expense of having and accommodating teachers in their right to be represented by counsel, to have cross-examination, to confront witnesses against them. We do all this. We have attorneys to advise the board, attorneys representing teachers, as the record reflects here, and attorneys representing the administration putting on the case or the charges, and then have to do it all over again before the Commissioner of Education, who does not even admit as part of the evidence in the hearing before him the record that was made at the local hearing, a record that costs thousands of dollars if a court reporter is there. We're harmed in that way. We are also harmed in this way. A de novo hearing at the agency allows the introduction of new issues, issues that a Board of Trustees doesn't consider. Generally, the allegations at the agency are that the Board of Trustees in some way have violated state or federal constitutional law. So there are new issues now. The Board of Trustees is on trial, and we're harmed in that fashion as well. But the real issue here, it seems to me, is what did the legislature mean by Section 23.26 of the Education Code when they said the Board of Trustees shall have the sole and exclusive power to manage the school district? What did they mean in Section 11.01 when they said that powers that are not delegated to the Central Education Agency are reserved to the local districts? Those pronouncements are clearly, it seems to us, inconsistent with a de novo standard of review that allows the commissioner essentially to make decisions.
Are there some interlocutory decisions by the commissioner that could not be challenged the way you have attempted to challenge this?
We believe there are. We believe the commissioner...
What's the line between them?
Well, I have too much respect for this court not to be honest. I don't think there's a clear line. And I think the Court of Appeals recognized that when they said, in their opinion, that essentially one has to look at the substantiality of the harm that is likely to occur in determining whether or not exhaustion should be required. On the other hand, I think it can be persuasively argued that this court made it perfectly clear what his jurisdiction was. The commissioner is simply going to limit this court to the specific facts of every case in which it makes a holding. The court said in the Upshur County case, without qualification, that the standard of review under 11.13A is substantial evidence. If I may quote, Section 11.13A only authorizes the commissioner to hear appeals. And the court went on to reaffirm a holding in 1961 that an appeal is not a de novo hearing. If it were, the commissioner would be making the judgment or substituting his judgment for that of the local board. In the Upshur County case, the court was dealing with elected officials who made a local decision. And the court further went on to challenge the legislature to say, if the legislature intends that the commissioner should actually have that authority to decide anew, it must say so. It has not done so.
Counsel, assuming you're right, why can't you go through the hearing before the commissioner and then file a lawsuit to set the commissioner's decision aside?
We believe this case is a good example of why we can't do that. If I bring one school
why
district...
Why you can't do it?
Why we cannot do it.
Okay.
Because if we do that, the commissioner will just limit this court to the specific facts of that case and we'll be up here again. The commissioner, in our view, simply refuses to abide this court's holding that review under Section 11.13A is by substantial evidence.
You mean
how
if he holds
that
trial de novo, then we will be somehow limited in our review of the standard by which he reviewed the school board's decision?
I believe it will render this court's decision of no effect. He will simply say, well, in that case it was a red Chevrolet, but in this case it's a green Chevrolet, and therefore we can have a de novo here.
Counsel, you made some allusion earlier to the trauma associated with children having to recount sexual abuse in another hearing before the commissioner, and that as being some harm. In reviewing your response, this, there's some pay issues and employment issues, and I believe one teacher had a beard, and there's some dispute over that. Is there any sexual abuse testimony that would be recounted before the commissioner or anything nearly that serious?
I have to speak hypothetically there.
Okay.
However, there
You're
is
not
one,
talking about this case.
I'm talking about when I said sexually, I said physically or sexually, and there is one case before the court. That's the Cypress Fairbanks case where the teacher was terminated for assaulting a student.
What is the record on how we know that the commissioner is going to, in your view, exceed his authority and act as an original terminator?
In the record, we filed motions for substantial evidence review, and they were denied. And the commissioner has iterated and reiterated that he has the power and will determine issues of federal or state constitutional law and grant relief to teachers based on his determination of those issues.
Which commissioner was this?
Commissioner Kirby.
Who's no longer commissioner?
That's correct, Your Honor.
Does that moot this case?
I don't know.
Will you think about it?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir, I will.
What's your best case for the proposition that this should be substantial evidence review and not de novo?
The Key Western case of 1961 and the Upshur County case of 1987. The Upshur County case specifically states that Section 11.138 only authorizes the commissioner to hear appeals. And it goes on to talk about what an appeal is, that it's inconsistent with de novo review. And it then states that the legislature, if it wants to grant de novo review, must expressly say so. What we would like to see is the commissioner do the kind of review that he does in non-renewal cases. In a non-renewal case, a teacher completes their contract. They're just not given another one. They can appeal that. And a record is made locally, generally with attorneys and a court reporter, and the commissioner reviews that record and allows additional testimony the commissioner allows supplementation of the local record in cases where testimony could not be procured at the local level for lack of or for want of subpoena power or for other good cause. And this to us seems fair. That way, the commissioner has the record that's already been made. There's not a duplication of testimony, and he can then supplement it with whatever additional testimony could not be procured locally, and then applies the substantial evidence rule to the record when it is complete before him. And this seems to us to be eminently reasonable. What is not reasonable is that I will speak hypothetically here, although having been involved in the case before the commissioner, I speak factually. The commissioner should not be deciding if employees of a district shall be paid once or twice a month. He should not be deciding the standards for selection of the cheerleader squad. He should not be deciding the standards for being valedictorian or salutatorian. And every grievance concerning virtually every condition of work is appealable to the Commissioner of Education in a de novo proceeding. The Commissioner's decisions are, by and large, good decisions. I want to say that because I'm anticipating rebuttal. I think, by and large, the Commissioner does a good job. The question is, he should not even be concerned with these. We should not be up there. We should not be put through that expense. We have brought one case to the court which we think is a good demonstration of where the commissioner has authority to act, and that is the career ladder. He is a specialized fact finder. Like most administrative agencies are, he has expertise in determining the standards to be applied for merit pay. This is what we think constitutes the school laws of Texas. When the statute says school laws of Texas, we do not believe that the statute comprehends federal issues of state or federal constitutional law, grievances about conditions of work, But school laws are those laws that are contained in the education code that the TEA promulgates rules about. And the commissioner has special expertise there. And that, we think, is what he should be deciding.
So the de novo or not?
We believe that it has to be under the substantial evidence rule. But these are the areas that are within his peculiar and particular competence. I would like to make one statement. There has been one reason advanced to this court for in support of varying standards of review under Section 11.13. One reason, I understand, and I'm willing to be corrected, one reason given why de novo review should be permissible under 11.13A, and that is because a sentence was taken out of this court's decision in the Upshur County case after a motion for rehearing was filed. And there is considerable writing in the application writ of error on that point. We believe this court's opinion is perfectly clear, and it's almost silly to suggest that we should understand this court's opinion by reference to sentences taken out, or that we should be able to understand it, we think, by reference to the four corners of the document. We don't know why this court took that sentence out or what it means. But what the court has written is clear, and that is that the standard of review is substantial evidence.
So I'll be clear, you agree that going to the courts in the middle of agency proceedings on virtually any matter would be disruptive to the agency proceedings?
We agree.
It's just that in this particular case, recourse is appropriate.
We believe so, and not only because the law is in our favor, the previous cases by this court, the Westheimer case in particular, but for matters really of common sense. We believe that this will save the district's money if we can finally get this issue settled. We have asked for a mandamus because we think the issue has been settled and the commissioner simply cannot be persuaded to comply. Thank you very much. May I be excused? Are there any questions?
Any questions? Thank you, counsel.
Counsel, so that I may be clear, do you concede the fact that you are asserting that the commissioner has the power to conduct a de novo proceeding?
Yes. Yes. No court has ever told him that he cannot. He's been doing it for over 60 years, and the Upshur County decision does not say what he says it says. The Upshur County decision does not limit the commissioner to a substantial evidence review of a local record. Specifically, Upshur County says that this does not mean that the commissioner cannot conduct an evidentiary hearing. But his evidentiary hearing is for the purpose of determining whether there's substantial evidence or abuse of discretion. That is the old substantial evidence de novo, a trial-type proceeding with a substantial evidence review.
It can't have it both ways. It cannot be substantial evidence de novo. I mean, they're inconsistent.
Exactly. And their whole harm is that they say they can't submit, they shouldn't be forced to go through an evidentiary hearing, and they cite Upshur County, which says that they must go through an evidentiary hearing. Upshur County does talk about appeals and the inconsistency with original jurisdiction, but the legislature in the education code in various places has said appeal by trial de novo, therefore placing no magic in the use of the word appeal. Mr. Fleming speaks hypothetically, and that's the whole problem with this case. He wants an advisory opinion of the court. He has absolutely no harm except going through the hearing. And the cost and burden there cannot be even equal to the cost and the time spent in these proceedings, which have now gone on for over 2 years.
Mr. Warner?
Yes, sir.
If there was a direct appeal from an action by the commissioner to the district court, what would be the standard of review in the district court?
From the commissioner to the district court, it's limited to substantial evidence review of the record before
straight
the agency.
Substantial evidence review of the record, taking no additional evidence, to correct?
That's correct, unless
that's
there's
appealed to the Court of Appeals. What's the standard of review in the Court of Appeals?
Well, it's similar. It's an error of law.
Basically, whether or not the trial court
is accurate in its assessment of the substantial, in its substantial evidence, and the same to this court.
Yes, Your Honor.
Assuming there are no procedural hang-ups along the way.
Yes, Your Honor.
Within an administrative agency, generally, under APTRA, from one level to another of administrative hearing, are the various levels restricted to substantial evidence of a lower level of review or lower level of action within the agency?
Well, there are cases even in the education code where the commissioner cannot substitute his judgment for the local district. And there may be in other agencies, I'm not sure. Normally, when you go from one level to another in an agency, it's de novo each time. The problem with this case is the school districts can't issue subpoenas. They don't have to follow the rules of evidence. They don't have to make a record. And they don't make findings of fact and conclusions of law. And so if the commissioner is limited to a substantial evidence review, what is he supposed to review if there's no record, which is one of the cases that's been enjoined here?
In other words, how does the commissioner assure that the parties at the hearing level before the board received all the guarantees of due process?
Exactly, and it must be kept in mind that the decision maker at the school district is one of the sides to the dispute. The commissioner, at the commissioner level, is the first time and the only time there is administratively an impartial decision maker. Otherwise, you have a school district deciding what it's going to do with its teachers, and they're one of the sides to the dispute. In order to balance that, the legislature said, let's have what I call an alternate dispute resolution mechanism administratively through the Commissioner of Education, and let him pass on these matters. And the statute doesn't limit it to school laws of Texas. It says any person aggrieved by the school laws or actions or decisions of any board of trustees. So any action adverse to a party may be appealed to the commissioner taken by the local school district.
One further question. A moment ago you said that there were instances where the commissioner, by statute, could not substitute his judgment for that of the local board. Are those, in those cases, is that restriction specifically set out in the statute?
There's one right there in B, Your Honor, 1113B under
in
student
all of
appeal.
Those instances where it's been held that commissioner could not take additional evidence or substitute his judgment for that of the local board. Is that specifically articulated in the statute?
That is specifically articulated in the statute and in the detachment and annexation proceeding in Upshur County. The legislature amended that statute to say de novo. So yes, Your Honor, that's correct.
Are there any other questions? Mr. Robinette.
If I could have just a moment. Primarily what I heard the school district arguing was that it wants this court to set policy in this matter. Most of the arguments about what should be the law about the way hearings should be held before the local school district and before the Commissioner of Education are matters that are more appropriate to go to the agency. I'm sorry, to go to the legislature. In 1984, this question was before the legislature. What was carved out at that point was subsection B of the Education Code. For the first time, in 1113, there was a provision that certain appeals would be under a substantial evidence standard of review, which would not be a necessary provision if that was the general rule. And the reason, I suppose, for that provision was the students didn't have a very good lobby.
Do you think this case is moot, going back to the question that I asked initially about Mr. Kirby no longer being the commissioner and followed up with Justice Carter's question?
I do not believe it is moot as long as the current commissioner has given no indication that he intends to change the ruling that was made by Mr. Kirby's hearing officer. I think the presumption you have to go on is that if this matter goes back to the agency, the case will proceed as Mr. Kirby announced it would proceed, unless there's some evidence to the contrary.
I have one further question. Your co-counsel had said that since the local school district is not required to make a record, doesn't have subpoena power, and has listed several other matters, that it made it impossible for the commissioner to review under the substantial evidence standard of review. But yet, under this chart, 11.13B, if a student appeals, the commissioner is limited to the substantial evidence review. Now, if none of those things are done by the local school board regarding a student, how can the commissioner review under the substantial evidence test?
Well, he can do it one of two ways. One is if the school district does make a record.
And but if it doesn't, how can he do it?
If he doesn't, then he can hold a trial de novo for the purpose of determining whether substantial evidence, which is the way unemployment compensation matters are appealed to district court.
Any other questions? Thank you, counsel. That concludes the argument in the first call. The court will now take a brief recess.